Welcome to NorAm Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
And Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny and Tim will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
When do you say my principal loss isn't worth the dividends I'm getting?
And now, here's your hosts, Danny and Tim.
Those computers really know how to trade well. That's what the market's made up of. You know that, stock nerds and market lovers, that the market it's computer driven. I mean, some of you accuse Danny of being a robot, but it's the computers that are playing with your emotions right now. So before we go any further, stock nerds, let me welcome you warmly and kindly to the show. This week's edition of Your Money Radio, Danny Stewart, Tim Razor, live with you here in studio. Don Vandenborde, the portfolio extraordinaire from St. Augustine, Florida. Historic St. Augustine, Florida, where there are no cows. Hello, Don.
Woo!
Yes, but there is a Ric Flair. Listen, stock nerds, the computers have gotten a hold of you. And what happens in these, the market, as I'm talking to you, we're going to do two segments today. I'm taping the segment on Thursday because, one, I'm losing my voice. And two, and it's because I take my young child, the Remster, I take him to the place of cuteness and sick babies. He goes there every day. And so he goes to daycare and it's just constant colds. And so I'm losing my voice, and then I've got things to do on Friday in addition to watching the markets, and I can't tape a segment on Friday. So as we're talking right now, the market has not decided what it wants to do yet. And so it's just trading in a box, and some of you have made up your minds as to where the market is headed. And I caution you, I don't know where the market's going. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Danny doesn't know. Don doesn't know. The cows that used to be in St. Augustine, Florida, that have migrated to Miami, they don't know.
No, they migrated north.
Oh, is that where they went?
Panhandle.
You got to go back a couple of shows to get the joke. Long-time listeners might get that. And so what I caution you on is forming a definitive answer. What we're doing is we're trading in a box. And when I say the computers have got a hold of your emotions, I'm not being facetious. So what's happening is you're going up to a certain fib level and the algorithms come on and they trade it down. And you trade down to a certain fib level and the algorithms come on and they trade it up. And one of these times it's going to break through or break down. And I don't know when.
Or which way.
If I did, I'd bet it all on black.
Yeah.
And so what you want to do is you want to use maybe smaller position sizing and wider stops, but you want to be open to the idea that markets can travel in either direction right now. And so with that thought in mind, you also want to keep in mind something we've said on the show for years as we progress on here, that investing is what? 90% psychological. And so it's interesting. And this is the media playing tricks on you, stock nerds. And so what happens is fess up here. Oh, you know, before I go on, speaking of fessing up, I was about to say voluptuous times in the market, but I was really trying to say... Then I was trying to say VIX.
VIX.
No. But that I don't want to say VIX.
Okay.
Volatility.
Volatility.
Yeah, when the volatility comes into the market is what I was trying to say. But then I had the thought going into my head that I also wanted to cover some breaking news and antibacterial wipes that we need to talk about.
Okay.
And I think it's
voluptuous volatility and bacterial wipes.
Well, I think the antibacterial wipe story is so, man, it is a really important story here that I think we need to stop for a second and just talk about it.
Okay.
So here's what's happening.
And you'll be able to bring it back though, right?
Yeah, I know where we are. Okay. I know where we are.
All right.
The media, people getting fooled. Investing is 90% psychological. Got it all up in my brain housing group. So here's the thing. Apparently bacterial wipes are a fraud. They're like David Stockman. They're like, who's that guy in Connecticut that's always pitching gold? He ran for Senate.
Schifferi.
Schifferi, yeah. They're all frauds. That felt a little reckless. But apparently antibacterial wipes are frauds. Apparently, according to a scientist, I read this in the Telegraph, according to a scientist who's done studies on this, antibacterial wipes are pointless as bugs grow back in 20 minutes. So you wipe down your counters, your toilet seats, maybe you fly in an airplane and you wipe down the tray table and all the other stuff. And 20 minutes later, the bugs are back.
Wow.
So what they're saying here is what to use is bar soap. Bar soap is apparently the bubbles, and something in bar soap breaks through the cell walls of the bugs and kills it.
So our grandparents had it right all along.
Yeah, pretty much. The greatest generation. And so that's why they were great.
And so great-grandparent, Lye soap, is that even better? You're probably too...
No, I'm too... Don't make me... I'm on the verge of coughing.
Okay.
So antibacterial wipes are pointless. And so we've raised a generation of kids and people who are now resistant to all forms of help in this regard. And we've spent a ton of money on these antibacterial wipes.
Marketing, baby. Marketing.
You know what? I went to Costco the other week. A 4-pack of Lysol is like $15. Man, that flu bug was powerful this year, and they got you bent over a barrel. Let me tell you that much. Don?
Demand.
Don,
supply,
any
supply and demand.
Any thoughts, Don, before we go on?
I based my whole life on antibacterial wipes. I really don't know what to do now.
Well, that's what I thought when I read this. I'm like, wow, that is... That is disappointing. So all those bacterial wipes, and I get the 4-pack from Costco. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie to you. Mm-hmm. Ain't doing nothing, apparently. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
You're sick. I'm not.
That's what I'm saying.
You buy the 4-pack. I don't.
I know. I think that scientist is right.
And I wonder if it's got a little thing to do with psychosomatic, too, because you are a little bit... You're not a germaphobe, but you're kind of...
Dude, you brought a guy into the office yesterday who said, I have the flu.
No. He had the flu. Well, we actually waited till he got over it before he could come in.
When did he come in? Yesterday.
No. He had the flu about a week and a half ago.
I don't know if that's enough time.
Doesn't you want to quarantine him for a year, Tim?
I think we should have done that conference by phone. You know how the flu doesn't travel? Through the phone. Whatever was said in person could have been said over the phone.
Oh, Don, that says the guy that gets sick. Go ahead.
I don't have the flu.
No.
We could have put that guy in a bubble, rolled him in here in one of those gerbil balls. All right. So
Boy in a bubble.
John Travolta stars in Bubble Boy. There's a guy whose career hasn't... What has he been doing lately? The People versus OJ? God, that was horrible.
I don't know.
That movie freaked me out as a kid, the Bubble Boy, John Travolta movie.
Well, how about when he...
That came out in the mid-70s.
Well, how about the one where him and Dolly... Was it him and Dolly Parton? He was a cowboy? Or Urban Cowboy. Yeah.
That was Deborah Winger.
Sissy and Bud.
Dolly Parton.
She's the only country star I know.
I'm a fan.
Wait.
That's like something in Maud, you know, that... Well, never mind.
Something and Maud?
Oh, it was a story about a guy that falls in love with this very older woman, like...
The Graduate?
No. This is before. It's a very strange movie. It's something in Maud. I can't remember. It's a guy's name. It doesn't matter.
And then there's Maud?
It's...
B. Arthur?
Yeah. It's a very strange movie, if you've never seen it. It's actually very, very funny. It was in the 70s.
I don't watch movies.
And she was like 75 or so, and he was 30. It was very different. Very
75 strange. And 30?
Yeah, it was different. And it wasn't really like they were dating. I mean, it's just, it was a very strange movie.
Sounds like they're ahead of their time.
Yeah.
All right. So, trading psychology.
It gives a new definition to Cougar.
So, 90% of this is psychological. And so, but the media is feeding you right now. And they know what you want. So, they're not your friends. And so, now look, we're your friends. And so, oh, Tim, you're just pandering to us. Maybe treat us like we're not your friends. It doesn't matter to me. Either way, you're listening to us, and you can take the information for what it's worth. You can let it go in one ear and out the other. But you need to parse what you're reading and what you're listening to, even the words coming through this microphone to your ears right now. The media knows what you want. And right now, you want fear. And right now, you want something that makes you feel warm and enveloped and cozy. And it's interesting because I said you want fear, and fear doesn't make you feel warm and enveloped in a blanket and cozy, like one of those beaver blankets that they give you at the Motel 6. You know, they're all fuzzy and stuff and warm. And so listen to me on this, stock nerds and market lovers. You want to be placated. So they come on and they say something that you agree with. Market's going to hell. And you're like, yes, the market is going to hell. I saw that. Market's going to fall. Market fell like a brick. Yes, the market did fall like a brick. That guy said market fell like a brick. And it makes you feel good because you had the same thought. And you get more of it. And like a drug, like cocaine, like the old marketing director for Chipotle used to take medicine. He used to take that as medicine. It was medicinal. Really? Not even a snicker?
I was letting it sit there.
Oh, gotcha.
Either tell me, finally, you didn't finally. Let me sit. Yeah,
finally.
Well, what I want to know is those fuzzy blankets at Motel 6 that you were talking about.
Don't touch them.
Germs?
Don't touch them.
So the bacterial wipes won't work?
You can't touch them. You can't ever touch
not
them.
Not even for 20 minutes?
You can't even touch them. You can't spray them down. You can't touch them. You're like MC Hammer. Can't touch this. And so when people say things that you agree with, it's the most dangerous situation you can get in, especially in markets right now. Now, for some of you, that's very controversial because you're going to take what I just said as I'm bullish. I'm not. Some of you, I don't usually get the answers back in email or direct messages on Twitter. By the way, Dan@revereasset.com, Tim@revereasset.com, Don@revereasset.com, 855-REAL-WEALTH or 1DStewart on Twitter.
No, 1DannyStewart.
Or 1DannyStewart on Twitter, pardon me. TJ Razor, REAZOR on Twitter, if you want to direct message me. Just let me know you followed me and I'll follow you back so you can direct message me. And D Vandenborg on Twitter as well. Just Google search it if you want to find
which
it.
Which I want to change.
Well, we may have a contest. We may actually ask people for ideas about Don.
Because all the N's and D's and B's.
I know.
Are all,
maybe.
B?
Maybe.
B?
Maybe. Maybe at Ramrick 1. Nobody.
I can safely say that won't be it.
No, I know. But
what about DB Stocks?
DB Stocks?
Yeah.
Thinking about Revere.
Thought about that.
Oh, was that one of them? Okay.
That was one of the ones I was considering.
Yeah. Could go with
DV, just the facts. Was another one that I liked.
Bond suck.
We'll talk about it.
So anyway, they're feeding you right now.
No, let's take your calls at 1-888-855-REAL-WEALTH.
Yeah, yeah.
855-REAL-WEALTH.
Yeah, if you want to call and complain, it's Dan@revereasset.com. So they're feeding you a steady diet right now of what makes you feel good. And that's fear. And you've got to be able to parse that. And anything that's especially when you have a close like you did on Wednesday, when the computers got kicked on as soon as the 10-year got over 2.9, the computers kicked on. And you got to understand, it went from 2.17 to 2.9 in lickety split, and the computers kicked on and they started selling equities. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And the way it closed, it looked super bearish. And then the way the markets opened on Thursday, it was what not you expected. And that confuses you even more. And so what I want you to do.
Meaning bullish.
Yeah. Pop. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Big
yeah.
Pop. I just
yeah.
wanted to clarify.
Yeah. Yeah. So
for the non-stock nerds.
Yeah. So what I want you to do and what I think you should do is just open your mind up that if I had smaller positions, maybe fewer of them, and some wider stops, you're going to navigate yourself through this. And then there's a couple, folks in the media that are telling you this is 87. Okay. Okay. Maybe it is. Let's not discount that, right? How do I know? It's a market and anything can happen. But we'll see. You get ample opportunities to get out. And people don't believe that. But
which would make it not 87. But
yeah. Well, 87, you had time a couple months and to get out. And then anyway, we don't have to debate that. When you start putting your opinion combined with somebody else's opinion, it gets to be a very dangerous marketplace. When you take a look at price and start analyzing on the charts and based on fact, price is fact, it gets a little bit easier. It doesn't make it easy. It just gets a little bit easier because this is my problem with people on TV or newsletters. They will tell you potentially when they get into something, but they're rarely are they there to tell you when to get out. And if they're there to tell you when they get out, they don't tell you how to position size for risk because they're not you. And so that's why it's really difficult for you to combine someone else's opinion with somebody else's opinion with something that you have just ruminating through your brain. And then you think this is what's going to happen. And then you get sold in that narrative. And then before you know it, you're like the gentleman that called us right before the election who put his entire account short as we went on this run from the end of 2016 through 2017. Now, who knows when he ever covered, but he had convinced himself that the market was going to go down tremendously. And he was right for about 4 hours on the night of the election.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And then before you know it, it's a market and anything can happen.
That was a guy on Twitter you're talking about.
No, right? It was a guy that called us. Oh, okay. I don't know if you remember him from Detroit.
Yeah.
And so I really, really caution you here that, listen, if the market, now we have long positions in the shop. We're not 1,000% long here. But if the market looks like it wants to retest the lows or go even lower, look, we're not apologists for stocks here, you know, or the economy or any politician. We're going to do what? Raise cash like it's our job, because it actually is. And you know what we're going to do? Be protectionist. And you know what we might even do? Go short and make money from that. And so we can do that. But right now, as I talk to you on a Thursday afternoon, as we're taping this, we're going to do two segments, Stock Nerds and Market Lovers. The market is in a state of chop, and it's confusing a lot of investors and traders, and I just want you to realize that, okay? So some other things going on. Walmart. What
WMT.
WMT. So quarter was not well received.
Not at all.
Not at all. And so we dumped it. So we had gotten in around 97. Don, where do we dump it at? I want to be accurate. I was about to quote something. Do you remember?
I'll look it up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so we got in around 97. I think we dumped it around 95, but Don, I'll get it. Sorry as I cough. So,
yep, 95-ish.
So small loss. Mm-hmm. Nope. Okay, I'll take a small loss as it goes down.
Well, it went from a decent gain to a small loss quickly.
Oh, yeah. Well, it reported earnings. Right. And so not well received. And so it can happen in a heartbeat, folks. And so, why hold on? Why not just hold on to it and see if it rebounds? Because these things tend to languish as it went down to, 89 or 91? And then who knows where it goes from here? I don't. And so what's the problem with Walmart? Well, some online sales. So what do they announce on Thursday morning? Well, that they're going to open up a furniture store online in similar fashion to what? Wayfair. If you don't understand what Wayfair
yes,
is,
yes.
Ticker symbol W. Mm-hmm. Wayfair gets a double dose of bad news. One, their quarter was bad. And two, Walmart announces that they're going to compete directly with Wayfair. Stock down over 20%. Wow. And so, and there are a lot of people in Wayfair. Wayfair was, it just had gone, it was going up in the face of all the shorts. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those types of deals. And so, you don't want to fight City Hall in this market is kind of my point here. Because what would you, if you had to ask me, Tim, what's a better stock, Walmart or Wayfair? Well, I mean, what's better? I would say Walmart, right? You know, I think a little bit more sturdy, a little bit more stable.
A little more cash flow.
But still, not great results. So you'd sell it because you don't know how low it's going to go. And a lot of people were probably thinking that Wayfair was going to get picked up by who? A Walmart-type company. So not only was their quarter not great, now there goes another suitor as Walmart says, I'm going to compete with you.
I'm doing it on my own.
Oh, yeah.
Which will also detract from other suitors because now it's not just buying out Wayfair. It's buying out Wayfair and competing with Walmart.
Right. And so what you want to do is you want to be really careful about buying stocks that you think are going to get bought because they're going to get bought out. You just don't know what's going to happen. And in this market environment, they get pounded. So you just want to be really careful. Really careful about what you got in your old portfolio. And so with that, Stock Nerds, Don, anything before Danny wants to open up the old Stock Nerd mailbag, and I'm in agreement with him. What do you think?
Go to the mailbag.
Okay, and we go into the mailbag. We go.
Well, so you know it's been kind of choppy lately, as you were talking about, and you know you're talking about the media jumping on and pounding fear. Like this week, it's been the fear. Doesn't matter what channel you turn it on, mm-hmm. whether it's political events, it's just all negative, you know, fear based. And the market, the Foxes and the CNBCs of the world, the investment channels kind of do the same thing. And a lot of the story was about worrying bond yields. Bond yields are going up, mm-hmm. market's going to hell.
Right.
Right. And so over the long term, that may be true, but anything's possible in the short term. Now, I answer these questions on this website, Investopedia. Anyway, and when I'm kind of bored at night watching the Olympics or whatever, I'll log in at 9:30 or 10 at night, and I'll crank out a five or six questions because it gives me kind of a perspective of what the most investors are kind of thinking, what mom and pop are thinking and what their fears are and concerns, because mm-hmm. you'll see the same question, you know, four or five different times, right?
Sure.
But it also helps me give a perspective, figure out, wow, where are the mistakes being made and where's the commonality of things that these people have to watch out for. So this guy is basically saying, look, should I rebalance my lifestyle funds? I'm retiring in 2020. And instead of having 20, 25, and 2030 funds, you know, he said, look, I'm 62 years old. I had a life change. I'm going to likely retire in 2020. He goes, now, with the exception of my savings, and he doesn't say how big that is, and so security, these are only my only retirement accounts, do you think I should change my lifestyle funds to reflect my retirement in 2020? In other words, should I take my 2025 and 2030 fund and move it to 2020? And if you look in these funds, the percentage change is not as big as you might think. But in a brief nutshell, the longer the fund, if you're 2050 or 2045, it's got a lot more emerging markets, international, small cap U.S., mm-hmm. and a lot more equity and very, you know, less bonds. As you get closer and closer in, it has more bonds, right? So basically I said, you know, without knowing your investment knowledge, spending needs, or especially the size of your account, which he didn't give me. Mm-hmm. and therefore the ability to handle drawdown, I can't give you sage advice. In other words, I can't tell you without, you know, if you got $2 million and you go through a 40% correction, you still got $1.2 million, right?
Yeah.
So you're still not going to be broke. If you've got a $200,000 for savings and it goes down to almost 100 and you get paralyzed by fear because now you don't have enough to retire, that's going to have a big chance on your big problem on your psyche. Now, so I said, without knowing the size of your accounts, in other words, if you had a lot, it probably wouldn't matter whether you'd move lifestyle funds. You could take on more risk. But if you're on the edge, you probably should move a little closer. The hardest question, though, is what if you don't have very much at all? Conventional wisdom would say that you can't take on much risk at all, so that you got to go very, very conservative. Well, that guarantees that you're going to run out of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is a plan that guarantees you running out of money conservative, or is that risky?
Explain that. Why is that conservative? Because a lot of people probably are like, they're paused right there.
Okay,
going, yeah.
So if someone doesn't have a lot of money, okay, didn't quite save enough, then the investment community, what the people that look at me and regulate me go, oh, that person's got to be very conservative because they can't afford to take mm-hmm. a loss. They can't take a hit. They can't go, kind of like your lifespan. If you're 25, the theory goes, well, you're young and dumb, so you can go through three major corrections and still be okay. Versus someone that's 65, they've got to move more to bonds because they can't live through another 2000. They don't have the time to recover from a 2008, right?
Right.
So while I agree with that a little bit, I'd actually like to have something that helps me with drawdown risk so that if I'm 25, if I miss two of the next three corrections, I may be able to retire at 60, not 80, right? But so in this guy's case, if you don't have a lot, they're saying you can't afford to take a lot of risk. You can't afford a drawdown. Therefore, you've got to be uber conservative. Well, with interest rates so artificially low, thank you, central banks, right, you can't make enough money in short-term bonds, midterm bonds, CDs, so that if this guy's only saved $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, and based on his spending, if he doesn't make at least 8, 10% or something like that, 7% annualized, right, he's going to guarantee to run out of money at 8 years or in 6 years or in 10 years. Mm-hmm. So at that point, is it better to say, you know what, it's better to take, in other words, is it death by 1,000 cuts? Or, I mean, if you run out of money at 6 years or 8 years, does it really matter?
No.
So that's why I'm saying that if being too conservative when you have very little money may really not be, and that's the hardest scenario to plan for. I'm not saying I got the answer. I'm saying that's the most difficult. But I want to take this a step further because I want people to understand there's so many people now with these lifestyle funds because you can just check it and forget it. You don't, it's a way to, you know, most people don't really, you know, we've got our following, we got the stock nerds, people that are engaged, right? But they've got friends, uncles, aunts, they've got other people that don't like investing, they don't understand it, they're afraid of it, they're following the fear media narrative, right?
Yep.
And so they actually want to have somebody, they just want to be able to do it, just check it and forget it. So they want to, oh, a target 2030 fund off the shelf. Heck, I retire in 2030. I'll just put everything in that fund and I'll be done with it.
Yep.
Here's the problem. And I've talked about this before, so, you know, pardon me for the people that are listeners a long time. Interest rates are at the bottom end of a super cycle, meaning since 1981, they've dropped. They've just now started going back up in the last year, 6 months, whatever. And if you look, all of a sudden bonds have been very choppy and have actually been losing value. Well, since 81, though, they've been doing nothing but going up in value and paying a nice high interest. So on these target date funds that have 40, 50, 60% bonds to provide you income because you're getting older, right?
Right.
And if interest rates are about to go up and bonds are going to go down, is that really such a conservative fund? That's the question I have. Here's the other thing. So I don't know which way it's going to play out. I just know the Fed is going to overshoot or undershoot. They're going to screw it up. They're not going to get it perfectly right. Why do I know that? Because they haven't the last 30 during my investing lifetime. So why should I think it'll be different this time?
Sure.
But I'm just assuming that.
Right.
I could be wrong. But if they don't, and here's the problem. They're raising, they say they're going to raise rates four times this year, five, and that's what this fear is all about, right? But if they really don't have the chutzpah to do it, if they really don't follow through, mm-hmm. and we actually do get inflation.
Right.
Okay. None of these target funds have a commodities component or a precious metals component, which that will be like your money market in normal time. So like in the 70s, the only thing you could do was gold or commodities. So either way, a lot of these target date funds may not be flexible enough. They were created. These target funds only came around in the last 10 to 20 years. Pre-70s inflation. And pre-rising interest rates. So I'm just not sure. I just think you need to be more flexible.
You know, what's interesting, too, is how many people have been sold on utilities as part of your portfolio mix? Not just target date funds, but a lot of these sensitive products, these interest rate-sensitive products, especially the utilities.
Oh, they, yes.
Get the, yes. Just, they've been getting crushed, and they're probably not where you want to be, but... That whole 40, that 60-40 portfolio mix where you've got some bonds, you've got your
saying. But you don't know how many people are like that.
Yeah.
That don't have the flexibility to move around. And it's really going to be a significant. And here's the thing. So even if the Fed doesn't want to raise rates, which they say they are, but a lot of times they're lying. Sometimes they're actually doing what they're saying. But a lot of the reason the interest rates had a little blip or spike, okay, was because this week the Fed actually issued more treasuries. The spending has gone up. Government fiscal policy has gone up. So they got to issue more bonds to borrow more money.
Yeah.
So are there enough? Now, if the Fed is truly doing reverse QE, meaning not buying more bonds, but tapering their balance sheet.
Right.
Right. Which actually their balance sheet went up 2 weeks ago. So they may be lying. But if they don't take on the surplus, if they don't buy, sop up the excess, is there enough buyers out there to keep rates from rising just in a natural market supply and demand? That's what is a big fear. So either rates stay low and we have big inflation, or rates actually go up, in which case bonds are in deep trouble. I mean, yes, it may make the equities more turbulent, more volatile, if you will. But if you look, everybody's worried about rising rates killing the stock market. If you actually look at studies, the early on in the rising interest rate environment, stocks actually perform well. And that's because the reason rates are rising is because the economy's expanding and accelerating.
Heard somebody say... Well, it's going to turn really bad because it's consumer driven that the economy's doing well. And that's going to spike inflation because the consumer's out there. But
the consumer's almost always been a component of it. I mean, one other thing very quickly. So a guy, this is a different question.
New question in the mailbag.
New question.
Is this the last question?
I got one more that's pretty easy. I could probably hit that one first. Let's do. Guy asked, "Can I?" He said he did on TurboTax. He said, "I was trying to do a tax deductible IRA. Can I deduct it? Why can't I a traditional IRA, regular IRA?" Okay. He said, "I tried to put it in there and it wouldn't let me do it." He said, "Is there a limit on income?" Now, my answer very easy. If you have earned income and are not contributing to a 401k, you can make a tax deductible IRA contribution. So there's no limit on income. There is for a Roth, but not for a traditional, right? Now, you can also contribute to a 401k and a traditional IRA, but there are phase outs. So you'll get phased out between $60,000 and $70,000 for an individual, and then $96,000 to, I don't know, $116,000, $117,000 for a joint. So, but here's I thought was an interesting question. This is the one that was different. It wasn't like all the others. He said, how is borrowing done in short selling and what is the benefit to the brokers? He's asking how to short sell.
Oh, okay.
He goes, how do you, if a person wants to short sell, how do you borrow stock? and what is the benefit to the borrowing broker? Well, he's lending your own money. He's lending you your money and charging you interest for it is the takeaway. But I said, normally your custodian, your broker, loans you the money and charges you interest, and actually you're borrowing against the value of your own account. Certain securities like penny stocks and highly volatile stocks are not marginable, and you can borrow up to 50% of your marginable account value. Now, if that goes against you, so the stock goes up instead of down and you start losing value, or the whole stock market starts acting weird, and your net equity goes down to 20%, you'll get a margin call and they'll sell you out because, again, they don't want to risk their money. They're only risking your money, but charging you interest on your money. So basically they lend you the shares. So they go borrow shares that you don't own. They lend them to you, and you sell those shares, hopefully at a higher price. The stock goes down, and then you buy them back and cover and pay off the interest. You got to make money, you got to make enough profit to cover the interest. Now, so it's the same, it's the old adage, buy low and sell high, but you're doing it in reverse order. Now, I told them it can be very tricky because the market goes down a lot faster than it goes up. You get strong bear market rallies. If you don't really know how to short sell individual stocks, I probably wouldn't advise it. Now, I said, I did mention to him there are short selling ETFs where it's a broad market index, S&P, Qs, or it's a sector short. So if you think it's a whole market or a sector play, you can find an ETF and just buy that ETF, and they specialize in shorting for you, and it's a lot easier to manage. So you can also do that. You can try to do that to make money or to hedge the portfolio.
Any thoughts on that, Don?
Great idea. Did you mention that that's really the only way to do it in IRAs?
That's a good point, Don. Okay. So you got to be able to you got to be able to borrow and margin the account. And IRAs you can't margin in an IRA. Mm-hmm. So you can't sell short in an IRA. So there's always more than one way to skin a cat. You can buy a short selling ETF where the ETF itself does the shorting within the ETF, not you as the individual investor. So there is a way to short in an IRA.
And I actually prefer that because when you start shorting individual stocks, it's sexy and it looks great on paper. But what happens is when you're holding that short overnight, you're at peril for the bank to come out with an upgrade on that stock.
You got individual stock risk, no question about it.
Or if anyone remembers this, it's rare that it happens, but two come to mind. Green Mountain Coffee Roasters was one of the more heavily shorted stocks a couple years ago, got bought out. And some guy actually owed the broker money. He had a GoFundMe.
Oh, it gapped up, and he couldn't even cover the margin in. Yes.
Yeah, it gapped up, and he was hosed. Yeah. And listen, they got a GoFundMe page and everything. You remember that, Don?
That's crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, that's just nuts. And then just recently, Chipotle is heavily shorted because everyone's just waiting for the next food illness outbreak. And they got a new CEO from Taco Bell, and it went up 11%. And you wake up to that. And they announced it overnight. Like, they announced it right after the close.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you could just get out during the day. They announced it literally the moment the market closed.
Yeah.
So you had, I mean,
all night to sweat.
Well, if you're short the stock, if you're short the stock, you could buy it back after hours, and that's what really causes a lot of that movement after hours.
Hard to do.
But it's a thin market, and they've got you.
Got to use limit orders, and they see that limit, and you got a decent size. They're gonna see because after market, you only have to put out their 100 share increments.
But if you've got puts, you did it through options, they're gonna be worthless, and so. It's really, I mean, it looks great. People talk a good game about shorting. Really difficult to pull off.
And when it actually starts to bounce or go up, you get a short squeeze where you get short covering and it accelerates the rally.
Yeah.
That's called a short squeeze. With the sectors and the indexed ETFs, they're actually not shorting. Well, there are a few funds that actually short individual stocks based on bad fundamentals, whatever. But most of these short selling ETFs are just using futures contracts. They're just short. Sure, they're buying, they're shorting the futures instead of going long the futures. Yep. And it's much more accurate, much cheaper, much easier to do. And it's easier to follow on a chart.
Yeah.
It's smoother. It's not nearly as choppy or, like all the gaps between.
Well, I'll tell you what, stock nerds and market lovers, I love you. Our numbers are through the roof because of you. You're watching our videos. You're consuming our media with our podcasts, and we love you. We wouldn't be here without you. If you want to become a member of the family, you want to join us, become a client of the firm, we would love to have you. It's a really easy process. 855 Real Wealth is the way to do this. Don't go anywhere. Stock nerds, Don Vandenborde and Danny Stewart take you through the second segment. They're going to give you all the stocks that are going to go up next week, all the ones that are going to go down, the ones to avoid. So don't you go anywhere. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Hi, I'm Sam Jackson. Cancer will strike more than 175,000 kids worldwide this year alone. This includes infants, children, teens, and young adults. The likelihood that teens and young adults will survive cancer is far greater when treated by pediatric oncologists. Survival can depend on treatment from experts in childhood cancer and a commitment to collaborative, groundbreaking research. To learn more, go to stbaldrick's.org or standuptocancer.org.
And welcome back, folks, to Your Money Radio. I'm your host, Danny Stewart. And in St. Augustine, Florida, we have portfolio manager extraordinaire Don Vandenborde. And in the previous segment, Tim had talked about us coming out back on the air Friday after the close. And he said that we would tell you which stocks are going to go up next week and which stocks are going to go down. And Friday, today, almost all the stocks went up. It was a booyah day. Everybody liked it. And so, Don, what are your thoughts on the market? Did we, you know, kind of sluggish a little early on, a little choppy, not too bad. But, boy, we finished at the highs of the day, and it was a strong day. What are your thoughts?
Very strong finish. High of the day, high of the week.
High of the day. That's what you want to see, baby. And the other thing, the other very important thing is the VIX, the volatility index, came off from being inverted. They're still fairly close, but there's no longer an inversion. They're not inverted. So they're stacked normally like they should be. And that is a bullish sign, especially when you come from a place of inversion. When the VIX are inverted, that means risk is very high. And a lot of times you're in correction mode or you're pulling back hard. So
contango. Let me hear you say it, Dan.
Contango. Contango, baby. You know what the other word is? Backwardation. You probably like backwardation better. That's probably your favorite term. All right. So the bottom line is what that means is the risk is perceived to be subsiding. And
big change from the close on Thursday.
That's true. The risk hadn't perceived to be receding yet. That it was still kind of scary then. So anyway, without further ado, let's let Don do the good, the bad, and the ugly. Don?
Well, the good this week, Dan, was if you own big cap tech, like the QQQ or XLK or big cap China / internet tech, KWeb, all up between 2 and 3.5%. That was clearly where the strength of the week was. As far as the individual indexes go, the Qs led up 2%. Everything else was up about 0.5% across the board. And it took a strong finish on Friday to get us there. Four straight days, starting with last Friday, and then we had the holiday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we saw afternoon weakness every single one of those days, and anybody that was waiting for it on Friday didn't get it. You had the complete opposite as we got stronger into the close, which, as you said, back into contango on the VIX after that, and strength in stocks. So bulls win the week, in my opinion.
Oh, no question about it. You know, and it was, you know, during Wednesday when the Fed was talking and Thursday, you know, the media really was coming out all talking about rising rates and you know, interest rate fear and all that kind of stuff. And it was scaring quite a few people. A lot of people got defensive. And I will say, in the previous segment, if you go listen, I was talking about raising interest rates, possibly derailing or being dangerous for the bond market. And folks, I was talking more about for those target date funds, the 2030, 2040 funds, where if or 2020, if you've got an allocation model where you're not really actively making changes, the longer term outlook for bonds is kind of dismal going forward, in my opinion. So, you know, specifically these target date funds, that's what I'm was referring to. Now, with the, if you look historically, though, when interest rates rise, when they first start to rise early on, that's actually kind of bullish for the stock market. Again, if you're, you know, mid to longer term investor, because that means interest rates are going up naturally because the economy is picking up. The economy is doing better. Earnings are accelerating and the demand for money is getting bid up by, you know, supply and demand. So just because interest rates rise a little, not a lot, but if they start going up, that's actually not bad for stocks. You may get a little more choppy, but it still could be a bullish environment. Now, getting back to those target date funds, Don, what are your thoughts on those?
You're absolutely right, and the trend it is certainly to the upside for interest rates. However, I did find it interesting that rates closed lower than where they were when the Fed minutes came out. In fact, we had a little bit of a gap down in rates on Friday, which led to a sell-off across the bond ETFs, LQD, TLT, JNK, IEF.
Right.
And you also have to be concerned about when everybody's saying something, Dan, isn't there a little bit of a contrarian in you that worries about it?
Yeah, you're getting on a crowded trade. Yeah.
Like you could see the mother of all short squeezes
at some
point. But I mean, there's no denying that the Fed, the trend in rates is up, but you will see some fits and starts in the meantime. The long-term trend is certainly up though.
Look. So here's a couple things, food for thought. The demand for money is going up. That's going to bid up interest rates. The Treasury, the Fed, is saying they're tapering. I don't know if I don't really believe what they say, but they say that they're tapering and not buying more bonds. But on fiscal side, the government is issuing a lot more bonds for this spending. They're spending more than they're spending even more. So the deficit's going to get a little bit bigger. They're going to have to issue more bonds. Are you going to be able to absorb it if that Fed is not the buyer? So just because of supply and demand issues, political issues, all kinds of things, and if things start to heat up, they're going to have to raise rates a little bit to fight inflation. Do I think we're going to have just a huge spike in interest rates? No, probably not. The initial fear, you know, happened. You had a couple-day fear and a little bit of a sell-off pullback, and then you rip the Band-Aid off. I think, in fact, I'm more bullish on stocks and bonds for sure. You know, anyway.
But you know what we're going to do? We're going to follow the charts regardless, Dan.
It doesn't. That's why if you're not a pie chartist, if you don't believe, you just draw a pie chart and one pie chart fits all seasons for every day in the sun, which we don't believe. I think you need to dress for the environment, what it's like outside. If it's raining, I want a raincoat. If I'm at the beach, I want a bathing suit. If I'm snow skiing, I want a jacket. I want a nice warm coat and gloves. So it just depends on what tell me the environment we're in, and then I'll tell you what kind of assets normally you want to own. So anyway, with that, Don, listen, you have a wonderful week.
Well, Dan, hold on. Oh, we're not finished.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Finished. We did the good. We didn't do the bad and the ugly.
I'm sorry. I kind of got off on interest rates and inflate.
We also didn't talk about the levels for next week. Now,
I'm sorry.
We do not want to leave the stock nerds and market
hanging, leaving hanging,
hanging. Hanging, yes.
Okay.
Our bad for the week, Dan's going to be Roku. Now, this was a stock that had a great last quarter. They came out this quarter and said, yeah, our our hardware sales are slowing, and it was greeted with a 14% loss for the week. But I don't think this story's over. I'm keeping this on my watch list because I think their conversion to a subscription model for people that are cutting the cord, I think that that's going to end up doing pretty well. So this is a stock I'm keeping on my watch list. Sometimes when things dump on earnings,
Let's be clear, for a reversal higher, okay.
Yeah. Or look down the road, you know, maybe wait till next earnings season, but I'm not going to forget about Roku. So.
Okay.
Still in the bad category for this week, though. Ugly is Wayfair, down 23% for the week. Just a horrible reaction to their earnings report. And what can you say? I mean, there's so much competition between Overstock, Amazon, Wayfair,
and Walmart.
Everybody's selling online. You know, retail, because of the competitiveness, is such a the margins are so thin that it's tough to be overly successful in that. And their free shipping model worked for a while, but not a good reaction. Although the numbers weren't bad, you know, the sales up 46%, but I think they downed guidance going forward, and that's the kiss of death.
Walmart or Wayfair. That's right. They beat earnings, but they had that big but. That guidance going forward.
Do you like big buts and you cannot lie?
I do. Especially when they're revising them upward, not downward.
Okay. All right. We're just going to let that one go.
It's yoga, man. Downward facing dog. It's no good. You want upward. Right.
Hey, levels for next week, Dan.
Okay.
S&P 500, we 2700 area is key. We tested it a couple times this week. That's also the 50% Fib retracement from the recent high to the bottom of the washout. Keep an eye on that. We want to stay above 2700. NASDAQ 100, 164.30 to the 164.50 area. Definitely want to stay above that. These are the levels where if we break below, I'll be making some get more defensive decisions. So, hey, let's share them with the stock nerds, right? Dow Jones Industrial Average, 24.765. Want to stay above that. And I really like, we bought TNA on Thursday, small cap, three times leveraged ETF. I'm looking, it traded in a very tight range the last five, 6 days between 152 and 154. Look for that to bust to the upside. If it does, I think the market's going to, you'll get participation all over the place.
Right,
but
right.
subtle relative strength out of the small caps over the last 3 weeks as compared to the S&P 500. IWM was the first one that broke the 50 or the 200 day moving average and during the decline, but subtle right. relative strength being shown over the last couple of weeks, and it right now fighting at its 50 day moving average closed. Closed right on the 50-day moving average, a couple pennies above on Friday, but look for it to break above the high of Wednesday of this week. And if it does, we're off to the races. And if it doesn't, we've got our stop at 151.60.
All right, you heard it right there from Fort Saint Augustine.
Come on, Dan, where
Saint
are
Augustine. I'm sorry.
No, it's Port Saint Lucie.
Port Lane Saint Lucie. Oh, that's too funny. It's St. Augustine, Florida, the lovely, historical, and a little bit more conservative, central Florida. You consider it central or north?
It's central Florida at all, Dan. Orlando is central Florida. Come on now.
Well, but I mean, I don't mean in the middle of the, I know you're on the Atlantic coast. I mean north and south.
Still considered Northeast Florida.
So you're considered East Florida. Okay, that's
Northeast.
Northeast Florida. Okay.
Pull out a map when we finish this conversation and find us on the map.
Wow.
If you have any questions.
Actually, it looked pretty cool. I do want to. We were down there last summer for a while down in Jupiter.
Jupiter.
West Palm Beach. In fact, you brought the Ramrick down there to come see us. And I tell you what, it's beautiful down there, but we drove through Florida. We drove down there, and going through northern Florida, it's pretty cool. But so since I knew you lived there, I started doing a little research, and man, that history and all that stuff, it's pretty cool there. I definitely want to make a, next time I go, I want to make a road trip north and see old Donnie Boy.
Dan, that Jupiter would be packed this time of the year down there with all the snowbirds. You wouldn't, it would be so different.
Oh, winter. Oh yeah. Winter. Summer. Yeah. We were in the summer and it was, yeah. Everything's cheap during the summer. I was going, what the heck's going on?
Yep.
All right, folks. Well, listen, have a wonderful weekend. Be safe. If you want to reach out to any of us, we made it real easy for you. You can just go to revereasset.com. Asset is singular, like Paul Revere, revereasset.com. You can email any of us. I'm Dan at revereasset.com. Don is Don at revereasset.com. And guess what? Tim is Tim at revereasset.com. You want to call me old school, 855-REAL-WEALTH. We'll talk to you next week on Your Money.